Hey everyone, welcome back. Customer experience has become the ultimate competitive advantage. In a world where products can be replicated overnight, how you treat your customers after the sale often determines long-term success. Research from Bain & Company shows that increasing customer retention rates by just 5% can boost profits by as much as 25%. Yet many customer success teams are overwhelmed, reactive, and struggling to scale personalized experiences. That's where artificial intelligence is stepping in to transform how we understand, engage, and grow our customer relationships. Today, I'm joined by Alyssa Nolte, a podcast host, serial entrepreneur, and researcher to explore how AI is revolutionizing customer success and what it means for building sustainable, customer-centric businesses. We'll also be discussing insights from my new ebook, AI-Powered Customer Success, a 10-step strategy guide to help you power your CS teams with a customer-centric AI strategy. To support the show, click like on this video and visit chrisho.com/show to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media or email me directly at show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Show, where experts, creators, and changemakers discuss how AI and technology are changing how we work, live, and connect. Unscripted, unfiltered, and unhyped. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Welcome to the show. Alyssa, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. My name is Alyssa Nolte. I'm a serial entrepreneur and podcast host, and I'm really excited today to talk with you about what I think is the future of AI, customer success, and the way we'll interact with businesses.
Love it. So let's start right there. Give me your definition of how AI can help that customer experience.
I think that AI is going to fundamentally change the way we think about how we build relationships with customers. And I mentioned at the open that I'm a podcast host. I have a podcast called The Growth Signal, and it's the entire exploration about what does it mean to build relationships with our customers when their expectations are changing constantly, when people are less loyal than ever before, and what does it mean when AI kind of now runs the show? And so we explore these conversations. And for me, I think that if you are not actively using AI to fundamentally change the way you do your job, I think you're going to be a little bit behind. Now, I don't think AI is going to change the exact way we do it. It's not, you know, we're not all going to be on a beach, unfortunately. But we have a real chance here to repair our relationship with work and be more effective and more efficient and just better at our jobs without having to work so hard.
So I think there's two pieces in here that I would love to dive into with you. The first one is leveraging AI so that you can improve your particular role and thus hopefully improve your relationship with your customer. But then there's also the other side, which is the actual use of AI that your customer experiences that may or may not necessarily be as impactful as you would like it to be. You know, there's been several studies recently how consumers are less likely to engage with AI. They're looking for alternative solutions to speak with a real human. And so there's a balancing act that has to happen here between, again, that efficiency you're talking about versus the relationship piece where the customers themselves are asking to actually speak with a human.
Yeah. And I think we're at a real risk point right now. You know, those of us who have been in any kind of customer facing role, a while back, we were all promised this magical thing called the health score. And it was going to be this solution that collected all of this data and flagged the customers that were at risk and pointed to how we could save them, and churn and customer loss was going to be a thing of the past. And that turned out to be a bunch of empty promises and a lot of disappointed people who thought all of a sudden they were going to have this crystal ball. And I worry that we're at the same inflection point when it comes to bringing AI into our business, and particularly bringing AI into any kind of touch point with our customers. There's actually an entire website around the idea of trying to talk to a person, and it has nothing to do with AI. It was really related to those phone trees, right? When you would call in for support or to a business and it'd be like, listen to this menu, press one for this, press two for this. And you're just like screaming, talk to a person. There's a website called gethuman.com that was spun up for that exact purpose. How do I bypass the phone tree and get to a real person? And I think it's the same age old problem that those phone trees caused, is we implemented those for the sake of efficiency at the expense of that customer relationship. And AI is going to do the same thing if we're not careful.
Now, what's interesting is that I think a lot of us think the phone system is a natural stepping point for AI, right? It makes sense. You've got people who are calling in, they're looking for support. You've got pretty advanced AI now that is good at responsiveness to voice recognition and being able to portray voice synthesis back to the consumer. But one of the areas that I see that's often a struggling point for organizations is that they are looking at AI as being the solution, or trying to figure out how AI could be a solution for existing ways of doing business. So, you know, you mentioned health scores. They're looking at, well, I'm going to take AI and help me with the health scores, as opposed to saying, you know, this is fundamentally different. How could we evolve, like, the concept of health scores, how can we evolve that to take advantage of artificial intelligence? And maybe it's no longer health scores. Maybe it's something completely different. And I think, again, a lot of people are just trying to shove AI into the spaces of familiarity, as opposed to trying to figure out how it could actually evolve to be something better.
I don't disagree with that, but I think there's one issue that a lot of people are ignoring, and it is because it's not sexy and it's not fun and it's not exciting and it's not interesting. And I had someone on my podcast recently who talked about this. We have to go back a little bit to the fundamentals, because for AI to be successful, there's a lot of fundamental ground level work that organizations haven't done. Right? Your AI needs data in order to do anything. And yet, how many of us trust anything that we see in our CRMs? I don't trust any of it, because I know that it's outdated, or it's something that somebody dropped in simply to bypass a required field. And yet we are connecting our AIs to our CRMs and expecting it to do something magical, when we as people don't even believe what's in those data sources. And so I think we do have to evolve. And I think we do have to think about, this isn't just a replacement for the existing way that we do work. It's not just an augmented intelligence for the way that we do work, but for it to evolve, for it to get to the point that we all believe or hope that it will, we do have to go back to some of the basics and look at, are we giving it everything it needs in order to reach that potential?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think there's some foundational approaches that, you know, whether it's getting back to basics or whether it's just foundational requirements that we would have, data being one of them. You know, I've often argued that the other area is just, you know, who is going to kind of facilitate some of this adoption.
Yep.
And, you know, I guess my question back to you then would be, is, if that is foundational, like data and data cleanup and ensuring silos of data across the organization has been removed, you know, what are some of those primary kind of initial steps that a customer success team might want to partake in order to start this process?
Yeah, I think you have to figure out, how do you reverse engineer the things that your AI needs to know? So figure out what your AI is going to do for you, right? Is it going to flag churn? Is it going to outreach to your customers for you? Is it simply going to send you a Slack message when a customer is having an issue and you need to step in, right? What is it going to do for you? And then reverse engineer, what are the data points that I need? And the hard part about that is, you know, that seems simple, like, oh yeah, we'll just reverse engineer it. But the hard part about that is that not all data is clean data, and not all clean data is good data. And not all good data is relevant or useful. to you. And so there's an entire tedious process that has to happen in order for you to get the thing that your AI needs in order to have the institutional knowledge that you intuitively have from working there for X number of years or for being an expert in the field. And so I think you first have to set a very clear and specific use case. My AI will do this. And whatever that is, don't scope creep yourself. Treat yourself like the way you would treat your clients. My AI is going to do this. And that's it. And then get that quick win and then figure out how you build that flywheel to start adding, like, my AI does this really well. Now it's going to do that too. I was just talking with a client and they're basically like, we're going to roll out AI and then we'll figure out how to make it do the things we want it to do. And I'm like, well, you're going to fail. That's not going to work.
Well, look, I love that statement because I often talk about how customer has to come first and then the technology is last. And then I've recently been tapping on an AI maybe. Like, maybe you can solve this particular problem with AI, and maybe you can solve it with other technology for a lot cheaper and a lot quicker. And so, yes, that kind of analysis of what does the customer need? What's the problem we're trying to solve? How is this going to impact our business? That is always, should always be your starting point. And then we can figure out, you know, how we're going to build that, how we're going to roll it out. And I think the other part of rolling this out, not just, you know, I love the framing of what's this one thing we're trying to solve, but also recognize that you don't have to go all in even to solve that one thing.
Right.
Most recently, you know, I was talking with Experian and they implemented a chatbot for some of their support calls and they rolled it out only to 8% of their customer base. It's a great approach when you can sit there and say, let's just figure, you know, if it's going to be churn as an example, you know, let's just target 5% of our accounts and see if it even does what we're hoping it's going to do.
Right. And I think there's an important point I want to make there though, because I wonder how they chose those 8%. Were they randomly selected? Were they fans? Like, were they friendlies? Were they at-risk accounts that they were worried about? Were they low-priority accounts? Because there is a risk in all of that. So I consult with a very large CRM whose brand you have heard of, and they had a problem for a little bit where they were really only consulting with their biggest fans, and their biggest fans give them a lot of grace, and their biggest fans give them a lot of hype because they're experts in this world. And so everything that they were saying, of course, made sense because they understand how that little ecosystem works. And then when they rolled it out to the general public isn't as forgiving. The general public doesn't give them grace. The general public doesn't understand all the context and have 10 years of a relationship with them to say, oh yeah, that's just how you do business with the CRM. And so I think you have to be really careful about when you do a micro rollout like that, make sure that you're not giving immediate bias to the results of that rollout because it could impact the other 92% who eventually get it.
Yes. And this is such a critical message. And it's not just when you're talking with your customers or trying to figure out how to roll out, you know, a new AI product. This is the case and something you should be thinking about all of the time. We've seen even more recently where a brand strategy rollout gets completely side blasted and they come back and they say, well, we've talked to our employees and our employees liked it. I share the story all the time about if you are going to your mom to ask for approval or your parents in general and saying, you know, is this a good idea? And your parents are saying, yes, this is a great idea. Odds are it's not a great idea. You know, yeah. Like, go and get some unfiltered, you know, opinions of people who are really going to challenge you. And, you know, part of the scenario in this AI adoption is that when you're also trying to consult with AI on that rollout and AI is telling you it's a brilliant idea, you should also kind of think through it and probably validate who you're actually doing this with.
Yeah. And especially because like AI's default state is to kind of hype you up a little bit, right? Because it's, let's be honest, this is an adoption play for AI. They're at a tipping point too. And if your AI only ever told you that you were dumb and stupid and your ideas were bad, we as human beings don't want to hear that. So we're not going to interact with that AI much longer. So it is tuned to make us feel good, to make us like it, because they want us to adopt and spend our $20 a month or whatever it is now, so that someday when they tell us it's $100 a month, we're like, well, I can't lose my imaginary best friend here. So I better pay that $100 a month now.
What do you think is the biggest challenge that, and we'll keep it to customer success teams, what do you think is the biggest challenge for those teams to start using AI?
A sheer overwhelm of possibility. I think that they are being told by everyone with a C in their title or a board of director, you have to implement AI. And it's the great thing about everything that we're doing with AI and everything that's coming is that it is a total blue ocean of opportunity. It almost feels like when the internet kind of became a real widely used thing and all of a sudden everyone went from I'm going to advertise on the radio to I'm advertising on the internet, but you got a lot of really crappy websites and a lot of really crappy experiences because everybody knew they needed to do it, but there was a sheer overwhelm of possibility. And I think that is the biggest risk for anyone who's trying to implement AI is that it can do so many incredible things. It can't do as much as you think it can because it's not quite there yet, but it will be. And so you just have to make sure you figure out how can I niche down, how can I focus, and how can I connect with the biggest thing that I can do that makes the biggest impact on me and my team without trying to have unfulfilled promises at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think that's a critical message as well, because oftentimes what we are seeing is that pilots or projects that tend to fail mm-hmm. are ones that are either too big, too broad in nature, or misaligned with capabilities. So if you believe like it's going to solve all your problems, and then you start to realize, hey, wait a second, this isn't solving all my problems, that's a misalignment in understanding of what AI's capabilities are. That has to be solved. And then you can figure out the internal alignment. And then back to what you started with, which was figure out something very small to start with. And I think if you can do all of those, then yeah, you are on at least the right path for success.
And a lot of it is framing, right? Like if you walk in and say, this thing is going to solve all my problems and it solves 50% of your problems, you're going to be disappointed, right? But if you walk in and say, this thing is going to solve 25% of my problems and it solves 50% of your problems, oh my God, you are so excited about this and it's revolutionized your work. So the same outcome is the same. You solve 50% of your problems, but you have to frame it in a way, not only for yourself, but for your executives, the people that are relying on you, the people that are evaluating this. And I think that's a real fundamental failure of all of the people who are hyping up AI right now, is that they are setting it, the technology, up for unrealistic expectations that are only going to disappoint people, even if it is a fundamental shift in our work and our approach. Even if it does revolutionize our business, it didn't change our lives, so therefore it failed.
Yeah, and you're being generous. I know you're just saying it like 50% of your problems. Like I go back and I tell people, what if it could just solve one of your problems? Like if it can solve one of your problems, you're successful, aren't you?
Yeah, I have a little AI note taker that I use right now. It's like a OneNote hybrid. And it solved a problem I didn't even really know I had. It started to connect other pages in my notebook to say like, oh, I see that you're writing about survey results. Did you know that you also wrote about survey results 2 months ago? Just here it is if you need it. And I was like, oh my gosh, the ability to connect it all together, that's so helpful. And that immediately was a positive experience for me. But it's not making the promise of like, and you'll never write another note again because all of the thoughts in your brain will suddenly magically appear on your computer, right? You have to make promises that you can keep. And the smaller, the better. Because you want to always, as we always say, you always want to underpromise and overdeliver. And I fear we are overpromising right now.
Most definitely we are. I mean, I see it every day. But, you know, it's also fascinating because like as you're talking about your note taking, it made me reflect on just last 20 plus years. And, you know, I used to have a diary. I would write in it all the time. I would have ideas. And then there was a point in time where I was like, oh, I know I wrote about this. It's somewhere in my diary. And I'm flipping through like multiple books, notebooks, as opposed to pages, trying to find exactly when I wrote it. Then at some point in time, I decided to actually keep my diary online. And there was an online service that I found that was basically a diary system, and I could type in my thoughts on a daily basis. And what was great about that was I was able to then go in the search. So when I said, oh, what was that thing I was talking about? Oh yeah, I know I talked about this. Search, find it, go back and relive it. And to your point, now with AI, it can proactively make those connections. So as I'm typing ideas and in my notes, I can go back and it can correlate what I had been talking about before. And there have been times even now where I've put something in and it said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about this. Are you talking about the same thing? Or how about I add this element in based on what you were experiencing before? Like, that's a great progression. And if you put that into context of your customers, specifically, you're getting feedback on a regular basis. There's a difference between going and searching for what customers have said and having AI sit there and tell you, look, most of your customers have been recently talking about this. There's a trend. Maybe it's something you should investigate.
Well, and like, let's take that even that analogy even in a step further, because imagine if you were taking notes on a customer and they were expressing a frustration about a problem, and you put that into your notes. And then over on the right, it popped up and said, hey, by the way, customer in a different industry, a different sector, a different, you know, company that's not even your customer, it's someone else's customer, had this same problem. Here was the solution that they came up with. This might be of interest to you. And all of that, like, knowledge that's locked up in our notes or in our heads or in the fact that I wasn't on that team, so therefore I didn't get exposure to that problem and that solution. Now all of a sudden I get to be twice as effective and that much more impressive to reach out to my customer and be like, by the way, we've seen this problem before. We've solved it. Here's how we solved it. What do you think? That just makes me that much better for my customer. My customer is not waiting time for me to provide value. And it doesn't require me to know everything about every customer that is at our company or has ever been at our company in order to be successful in the moment.
I think that also triggers additional element when I'm thinking about adoption within organizations and specifically with customer success. When you have data that is, again, siloed in nature, different accounts, different sales teams, calls coming into the support center, if you have voice of the customer programs that are tracking different types of opinions, marketing, messaging, all of this stuff is kind of operated in silo. But if you could imagine a centralized type of version of this so that as a sales team even is out there pitching and they have a question about the product in some way, to be able to get kind of an instant summary of that problem from different teams' perspectives, messaging, opinions, product ideas, all of those can be collaborated into a consistent, you know, type of output that not just customer success could use. You know, everybody within the organization can use it and be able to extend their opportunity for success.
Absolutely. It's been the goal of mostly every organization to unsilo these things. And we've been trying to do this for like 15 years, it feels like, maybe longer. I've been trying to actively work on it for almost 15 years. And now I think we're finally at the point where this dream of everybody in your organization having access to what they need in order to do their job, to sound smarter, to sound, you know, like they know what's going on, to have all the details, whether they are a first day or a long-term veteran, I feel like that is within our grasp finally, but we do have to do the fundamental work to unsilo that so we can make it accessible to everyone who needs it and so that our AI dreams can become a reality.
Well, before we wrap up, I'd love to hear more about how are you using AI on a regular basis?
AI has become the first thing that I go to in the morning and the last thing that I close at night. I use it for search. I ask it questions. It helps me troubleshoot. It has become my co-pilot in making sure that what I am doing makes sense and is understandable to other people. My favorite ChatGPT prompt is roast this. I'll post something that I write and I'll be like, tell me everything that's dumb about it, everything that everyone's going to make fun about it, because I want to make sure that everything that I'm putting out there reaches that level of clarity and understanding. And sometimes when you're too close to your own stuff, you just don't see it for what it really is. I think that if you're not already in touch with AI, if you're not already thinking of it as your opportunity to become Iron Man or superhuman in some way, you're missing the boat. And I would challenge everybody who's listening to just start exploring with how can you use AI in simple things. As simple as I taught my 10-year-old to take a picture of the fridge and ask AI what we should have for dinner.
I love it. And there are several different types of, you know, other than ChatGPT, we've got Claude, we've, you know, we've got Grok, we've got other types of services. Have you noticed or have you played at all with, you know, I love the kind of roast this, you know, perspective, but have you played with each one of those or other versions to see, you know, how they respond in terms of critiques or approvals so that you can get better output?
Here's the interesting thing, and I think it's something that all of these AI companies are going to have to overcome. My ChatGPT, I have been a user since before they had a premium version. So before you even had like the ability to pay them for anything. So my ChatGPT knows so much about me that it has such a depth of like training on who I am and how I write and what I do and what my priorities are. But even when I go test other things, I haven't done the training on those. I haven't trained those models to be tuned to me. So they can't possibly compare because every time I try it, it's like, well, ChatGPT knows me better. And so I think that we're going to have to figure out a way to either us as users, like how do we train all these models so that we get to use the very best of breed all simultaneously? Or someone's going to have to figure out how you sit in the middle to say, hey, I'm a middleware. We train on you and we tap whatever model you want to use, right? But unfortunately, because I'm so enmeshed in ChatGPT, the others can't compare simply because they haven't been trained on me. They're not personalized to me. And if I took the time to train all of them, I bet it would be a really interesting experiment to see which is better. And I bet it changes day by day, week by week, as they make improvements to their own models.
Well, I'm sure we'll probably move to some sort of shared profiling type of system, you know, similar to we have a driver's license or a social security number. We'll probably have an AI profile that you can then just tap in and all of those models out there will be able to recognize who you are and, you know, what your personality traits are and your style and all that kind of stuff without the need for additional training. But we're probably a couple of years away from getting that. But I appreciate it. How can people get in touch with you?
You can come hang out with me on LinkedIn, Alyssa Nolte. You will see me as the Notorious Plant Killer. That is my headline on LinkedIn. So definitely come hang out with me, connect, send me a message. Let me know you came from this show. And I would love to have a chat with you about the future, killing plants, whatever you prefer to talk about. And I hope to see you there.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure that we have all those links available in the show notes so that people can find you and reach out and connect. Really appreciate your time and perspective. It's been fabulous.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been great.
And for everybody else, stay tuned, come back next week, and we'll see you again shortly.